Warner Brothers. A Warner Communications Company presents. A teenage girl is sitting cross-legged on her bed, fussing over a large dog perched on its haunches.
My mother died of pneumonia when I was just a kid. My father had kept their wedding cake in the freezer for 10 whole years. After the funeral, he gave it to the yard man. He tried to act cheerful, but he could never be consoled by the little stranger he found in his house. Then, one day, hoping to begin a new life away from the scene of all his memories, he moved us from Texas to Fort Dupree, South Dakota.
A parched alley is lined with basic homes. Garbage cans have been left at the roadside. A dustbin lorry travels through a more salubrious and upmarket neighborhood. A couple of men are holding on to the back of the truck. It turns off the suburban street and down the alleyway. One of the men pulls a lever, and the mechanism at the back of the truck grinds into action. His colleague is examining the body of a dead dog.
I'll give you a dollar, eat this collie.
His burly colleague looks down at the corpse.
I ain't gonna eat him for a dollar. I don't think he's a collie either. Some kind of dog, though.
Watch your head.
The younger man talks to the driver.
Hey, Woody. Give him a cigarette. Woody wouldn't give me a cigarette. Ever notice he don't talk much?
Yeah, he's not a talker. Not that.
Little did I realize that what began in the alleys and backways of this quiet town would end in the Badlands of Montana.
No, they wouldn't fit.
How do you know? You haven't tried them all?
Yeah, no. What size are they?
Your size. Oh. Come on, give me a dollar for them. Cost 20 new. Why don't you see if they fit you?
The younger man, who's wearing blue jeans and a white t-shirt, peers into a backyard, then throws something for a dog. He scrabbles through the contents of a bin.
This lady don't ever pay her bills. She's gonna get in trouble if she doesn't watch out.
The man's colleague sees a magazine on the grass and tucks it into his back pocket.
I throw enough trash per day, Cato. I'll see you in the morning.
Catch.
Cato throws a balled-up piece of paper after the younger man, who playfully tosses it back before heading down the dusty alley, trying to balance a discarded mop on his fingertips. Pressman Williams presents a Jill Jakes production, starring Martin Sheen, Sissy Spacek, and Warren Oates. The young man crushes a can beneath his foot and boots it down the alley. When he looks up, something in the distance grabs his attention. The teenage girl is practicing twirling a baton in her front garden. Badlands. The young man approaches the girl outside her home, a small but pleasant property with a grey roof and cream and white paintwork.
Hi, I'm Kit. I'm not keeping you from anything important, am I?
No.
Just thought I'd come over and say hello to you. I'll try anything once. What's your name? I said mine.
Holly.
Well, listen, Holly. You want to take a walk with me?
What for?
Oh, I got some stuff to say. Guess I'm kind of lucky that way. Most people don't have anything on their minds, do they? Oh, incidentally, my last name is Carruthers. Sounds a little too much like Druthers, huh?
It's okay.
Yeah, well, nobody asked me what I thought. They just hung it on me.
You still in school?
Yeah, I have a job.
Doing what?
Well, I don't mind getting up early, so I got a job throwing garbage. I'm not in love with the stuff, okay?
That's my father. I gotta run.
Well, hey, wait. When am I gonna see you again?
Well, I know what my daddy's gonna say.
What?
Can't be honest.
Sure.
Well, that I shouldn't be seen with anybody that collects garbage.
You say that?
Yeah.
Now, what's he know about garbage, huh?
Nothing.
There you go.
Well, I mean, there's nothing he wants to know. I gotta run.
Holly runs off, and Kit raises his arm in farewell.
Who was that?
Just some boy. Is that gonna kill the grass? You got some on my feet.
What do you want?
He's just asking if we need any yard work done. I said no, and for him not to bother us.
Kit passes a man on his way into a barn.
Heard the news, Kit?
No. Been in all the headlines.
What's that? You've been fired. Ain't that a hell of a note?
Yeah, how about that? Oh, I don't need my keys anymore. I'll just leave them with a nice hand.
He drops them into a murky oil can.
I've got my dog.
You ever held another job before?
Yeah, it's just old trash in the city.
You lost that one?
Yeah, I wouldn't be here if I hadn't.
Why did you leave?
This fella. What
kind of work do you think you'd be qualified for? I just gotta get this.
Man, I can't think of anything at the moment. I want you to write me out a slip, though, proving I came down here.
Well, I think we can get you something working cattle over at the pens.
Yeah, what the hell? Just hope there's a breeze.
The clerk hands Kit a slip of paper. Now he's lurking outside Holly's house.
He was handsomer than anybody I'd ever met. He looked just like James Dean.
Hi.
I'll stop the world.
Hey, good my job.
Great.
Seemed like the right move. What you doing?
Spanish.
I say quit my job in Spanish.
Something, Major Bajo.
Well, I'm going to work as a cowboy now. Thinking about it. That's a routine like anything. What do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, at least nobody can get on me about wearing his boots anymore.
He lights a cigarette.
You wanna go for a ride?
Well, I got homework.
Bring it along.
The two of them are walking along a pavement.
Somebody dropped a bag on the sidewalk. Everybody did that, the whole town be a mess.
Our dog will be doing some paper.
You're red here.
I know.
Anybody ever call you red?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why not?
Just don't. I got a headache.
Oh, yeah?
They cross the street, then get into a matte black car with chrome bumpers.
Can I come around and see you tomorrow?
Okay.
A cow peers through heavy bars. A gate is pulled back and it dashes out. Then Kit pulls down a lever, trapping the animal.
Kit went to work in the feedlot while I carried on with my studies. Little by little, we fell in love. As I'd never been popular in school and didn't have a lot of personality, I was surprised that he took such a liking to me, especially when he could have had any other girl in town if he'd given it half a try. He said that I was grand, though, that he wasn't interested in me for sex, and that coming from him, this was a compliment. He'd never met a 15-year-old girl who behaved more like a grown-up and wasn't giggly. He didn't care what anybody else thought. I looked good to him, and whatever I did was okay. And if I didn't have a lot to say, well, that was okay, too. What a nice place.
Yeah, the tree makes it nice.
And the flowers. Let's not pick them. They're so nice.
It's your play.
Of course, I had to keep all this a secret from my dad. He would have had a fit, since Kit was 10 years older than me and came from the wrong side of the track, so-called. Our time with each other was limited, and each lived for the precious hours when he or she could be with the other, away from all the cares of the world. My stomach's growling.
There's old Fudsicle. You want it?
No.
Somebody else is gonna get it.
I don't care.
Kids eat that kind of stuff in Korea.
In the stench and slime of the feedlot, he'd remember how I'd looked the night before, how I ran my hand through his hair and traced the outline of his lips with my fingertip. He wanted to die with me, and I dreamed of being lost forever in his arms. The whole time, the only thing I did wrong was throwing out my fish when he got sick. Later, I got a new one, but this incident kept on bothering me, and I turned to Kit.
Well, he was sick. You couldn't do much about that.
Guess not.
They walk side by side along a sun-drenched pavement.
I didn't mind telling Kit about stuff like this, because strange things happen in his life, too, and some of the stuff he did was strange. For instance, he faked his signature whenever he used it to keep other people from forging important papers with his name. And as he lay in bed, in the middle of the night, he always heard a noise like somebody was holding a seashell against his ear. And sometimes he'd see me coming toward him in beautiful white robes, and I'd put my cold hand on his forehead.
It's a sunny day. As Kit is tucking his t-shirt into his jeans, Holly buttons up her pale yellow short-sleeved blouse.
Did it go the way it's supposed to?
Yeah.
Is that all there is to it?
Yeah.
Gosh, what was everybody talking about?
Don't ask me.
Well, I'm glad it's over. For a while, I was afraid I might die before it happened. Had a wreck or some deal like that.
Did you see where that tree fell in the water?
Yeah. The river must have washed the roots away. You don't care about anything I say, though.
You know what I think?
What?
We should crunch our hands with this stone. That way we'd never forget what happened today.
But it would hurt.
Well, that's the point, stupid.
Don't call me stupid.
Okay, but I'm gonna keep it for a souvenir. Or maybe one that's lighter.
He throws away the large stone he chose and picks up a smaller one, tossing it in his hand as he approaches the car.
Kit made a solemn vow that he would always stand beside me and let nothing come between us. He wrote this out in writing, put the paper in a box with some of our little tokens and things, then sent it off in a balloon he'd found while on the garbage route. His heart was filled with longing as he watched it drift off. Something must have told him that we'd never live these days of happiness again, that they were gone forever.
Holly's dog is bounding through a field of tall grass.
Then, sure enough, Dad found out I'd been running around behind his back. He was madder than I'd ever seen him. As punishment for deceiving him, he went and shot my dog.
As her father kills her dog, Holly turns and runs away. Later, Her father takes a kit bag containing the dog's body out of his car, drops it off a bridge into the muddy river water below. The impact causes ripples to spread out, then it starts to slowly drift with the current.
He made me take extra music lessons every day after school and wait there till he came to pick me up. He said that if the piano didn't keep me off the streets, maybe the clarinet would.
Kit approaches Holly's father as he's painting a large billboard sign out of the countryside.
No, it's pretty.
He warily eyes the younger man.
What do you come out here for?
I wouldn't wear his any law against it.
As Holly's father dips his brush into a paint pot, Kit throws away the piece of fruit he's been eating.
You know Holly?
Well, she means an awful lot to me, sir.
Before I met her, nobody could ask me how I was doing with my girl. Matter of fact, I didn't really have one.
Is that right?
Kit rests against Holly's father's truck. The bonnet is spattered with paint drops.
It okay me leaning on your Willis here?
Father continues painting with a cigarette held lightly between his lips.
Look, I got a lot of respect for her too, sir.
Father doesn't look at him.
It's about as good a one as I know to tell you.
Well, it's not good enough. What do you think happened to her if she stuck around with you, Kit? A guy like you.
She'd get along okay. If she didn't, why? She could just take off. Just take right on off, I wouldn't mind. I always tell people I deserve it.
Father gets up from his painting stool and moves towards Kit along the suspended platform.
I don't want you to hang around anymore. I don't want to see you again. Understand?
He turns away and sits back down. Kit watches him appraisingly, with his head tilted to one side.
Use something.
Kit stops leaning on the truck.
Tastes all kinds, sir.
Kit wags his finger as a desultory farewell, then looks back at Father before heading to his car with his hands wedged into his back pockets. Father continues painting a farmhouse scene. Kit is making his way towards the house. As he heads up the front path, he looks around him, then bends over to pick up a newspaper. He taps on the door. At the side of the house, Holly is sitting on a bench with her clarinet in her hands. Her father pulls up and she hurries across the lawn to join him. Still holding the newspaper, Kit tries to peer through the door, but his view is obscured by the piece of net behind the glass. Wearing a shifty expression, he opens the creaking screen door, then heads into the house. A fan cools the air in Holly's room. Kit takes a pretty box off the windowsill and empties the contents into a suitcase, then gathers up the clothes in a drawer and puts them in as well. He's just put in a handful of her underwear when Father appears at the top of the stairs. He stands very still in the hallway, and Kit turns to look at him.
Hi. What are you doing?
Got a gun here, sir. It's always a good idea to have one around.
What do you think you're doing?
Holly comes up the stairs.
Come on, get out of here.
I got it all planned. And I'm taking Holly off with me.
Okay, boy. I'm turning you over to the authorities.
What for?
Coming on my property with a gun.
No, you're not either.
Yeah? Why not?
Because I can't lie.
Hey! Hey, wait a minute!
Suppose I shot you. How'd that be? Huh? You wanna hear what it sounds like?
The two men stare at each other. Kit at the top of the stairs, Father framed in the doorway at the base. Father moves off.
Kit! Kit!
Hey, where you going?
Kit shoots Father twice in the stomach and he drops to the floor. Holly hurries to his side.
Daddy? This is Holly. Are you gonna be okay?
Holly strokes Father's face and looks back at Kit, who is pacing with a cigarette in his mouth. Holly stands up and glances briefly at Kit on her way into the kitchen. Kit follows her, running his hand through his dark hair, then he pulls a door shut.
I came in the front.
How bad off is he?
I can look and see.
We better call the doctor. Listen, I'll say it happened. Part I saw.
Well, I don't think that'll work.
Kit heads into the other room and lightly presses his hand on Father's chest.
You don't need a doctor.
He goes back into the kitchen.
Are you sure?
If you don't believe me, see for yourself.
Night has fallen on the house, which stands in darkness. Kit drags Father into a room, his heels catching on a door jamb, then lets the limp body down onto the ground. He crouches down beside the corpse, his breathing heavy from the exertion of hauling the dead weight. He stands up and dusts off his jeans with the palms of his hands. Something glinting in the corner catches his eye and he picks it up. He takes it with him out of the room and carries it back into the kitchen.
I found a toaster.
He shuts the door, then approaches Holly with his head bent. When he reaches her, she slaps him across the face.
Don't worry, honey,
He moves past her into the living room, filled with cozy furniture and a piano against one wall. He takes a seat on the piano stool, and Holly comes in after him a moment later, looking painfully young in her green cotton dress, black shoes and white ankle socks. She sits down on one of the sofas.
Listen, maybe we ought to tell somebody about this.
You said that once already. Too late now.
Why?
They're not gonna listen to me. You either. You kidding?
Suppose the neighbors heard the noise.
Wouldn't be funny. Listen, I'll be back after a while. If you want to call the police, that's fine. This won't be so hot for me.
He walks away along the dark hallway, then opens the back door. He pauses for a moment and looks back at Holly, his face covered in a thin sheen of sweat, then he heads out. Holly rubs away the tears in her eyes and leans back on the sofa, looking drained. A little later, she solemnly trudges up the stairs, looking preoccupied and smoking a cigarette. She heads into her bedroom and stands at the window. The light behind her casts her outline into silhouette as she gazes down at two small boys hanging out by a fire hydrant on the street corner. One of the boys, who's been pacing around a telegraph pole, loses interest in his game and sits down on the curb next to his friend. Kit's at a recording booth.
My girl Holly and I decided to kill ourselves, same way I did her dad. Big decision, huh? The reasons are obvious. I don't have time to go into them right now. But one thing, though, he was provoking me when I popped him. That's what it was like. Pop. Oh, we're sorry. I mean, nobody's coming out of this thing happy, especially not us. I can't deny we've had fun, though. And that's more than I can say for some. That's the end of the message. I ran out of things to say. Thank you.
He collects his disc from a slot below the microphone, then steps out of the small booth, labelled the Voiceograph Private Recording Studio. He passes a couple of older men sitting on wooden benches. At the house, he unscrews the cap on a petrol canister and starts liberally tossing the contents over the piano and around the living room. He works frenetically, making his way through the different ground floor rooms. Holly steps outside, carrying a painting under her arm. Kit places a lamp on a table, then puts the needle on a record in a player.
Kit left a record playing over and over for the district attorney to find. He was gambling for time.
Kit sets light to the trail of petrol leading up the back path to the house and grabs the lamp and hurries to his car. He drives off into the night. The flames spread throughout the house, licking up the walls and across the face of a cherubic child in a painting, then swallowing up peacock feathers in a jar. The inferno rages in Holly's bedroom and consumes a doll's house. The blaze churns from the back door like a tornado. So far, the fire is yet to reach Father's body. The piano has been engulfed, and other bits of furniture have been rendered unrecognisable by the firestorm. Weakened by the inferno, small side tables begin to collapse on their spindly legs. Outside, someone shines a torch through the darkness while the fire blazes behind them. Holly grabs some books from a locker in a corridor.
Kit made me get my books from school so I wouldn't fall behind. We'd be starting a new life, he said, and we'd have to change our names. His would be James, mine would be Priscilla. We'd hide out like spies somewhere in the north where people didn't ask a lot of questions. I could have snuck out the back or hid in the boiler room, I suppose, but I sensed that my destiny now lay with Kit, for better or for worse, and that it was better to spend a week with one who loved me for what I was than years of loneliness.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Kind of tired.
Yeah, me too.
It's daytime, and Kit drives along a residential road. A tree dragged from its roots lies across the swollen waters of the river.
We hid out in the wilderness, down by a river in a grove of cottonwoods. It'd be in the flood season. We built our house in the trees with tamarisk walls and willows laid side by side to make a floor. There wasn't a plant in the forest that didn't come in handy.
Different types of leaves and tree barks, and a black beetle perched precariously between the jagged spikes of a cactus plant. The sweet-smelling, bud-like leaves of a fir tree, then logs being hammered into place with a makeshift tool.
We planned a huge network of tunnels under the forest floor, and our first order of business every morning was to decide on a new password for the day. Now and then, we'd sneak out at night and steal a chicken or a bunch of corn or some melons from a melon patch. Mostly, though, we just lay on our backs and stared at the clouds, and sometimes it was like being in a big marble hall, the way we talked in low voices and heard the tiniest sound.
The couple sleep in their treehouse, decorated with a framed painting from home. Kit is lying on his side, covered only by his denim jacket, and with his pistol close to hand.
They hadn't found but one set of bones in the ashes of the house, so we knew they'd be looking for us. Kit made sure we'd be prepared.
Kit unleashes a booby trap.
He gave me lectures on how a gun works, how to take it apart and put it back together again, in case I had to carry on without him. He said that if the devil came at me, I could shoot him with a gun. One day I carried 30 pounds of wood a distance of 5 miles. Another day, while hiding in the forest, I covered my eyes with makeup to see how they'd come out.
Holly dances barefoot in the dirt while Kit moves around her, sidestepping in his brown and white leather cowboy boots. They dance independently of one another within a confined space of their own making. Later, Kit manages to scoop up a fish in a homemade net. It flips out of the net and he tries to scrape it back, but it's long gone.
We had our bad moments, like any couple. Kit accused me of only being along for the ride, while at times I wish he'd fall in the river and drown so I could watch.
Take a break, Rick. Life at Riley, huh?
Mostly, though, we got along fine and stayed in love. One of the chickens died last night.
She washes her face while Kit lathers up his chin, then sets about shaving himself with the help of a small mirror mounted on a stick. Holly picks up an axe.
I almost stepped on him. The Kentucky's motion was a little different from what it usually was in such conditions. We have become sensitive to changes in the rhythm of the logs. I thought at once of suction from the coast, which was drawing near, and was continually out on the deck and up the mast.
He was nervous.
Time passed. At dawn, just before 6, Torstein came hurrying down from the masthead. He could see a whole line of small palm-clad islands far ahead.
Holly walks through the shallows at the very edge of the babbling river, the water only just brushing the tops of her feet. She watches a wild animal.
I grew to love the forest. The cooing of the doves and the hum of dragonflies in the air made it always seem lonesome and like everybody's dead and gone. When the leaves rustled overhead, it was like the spirits were whispering about all the little things that bothered them.
Sitting in the treehouse, Kit is giggling at a picture in a copy of the National Geographic magazine.
One day, while taking a look at some vistas in Dad's stereopticon, it hit me that I was just this little girl, born in Texas, whose father was a sign painter, who had only just so many years to live. It sent a chill down my spine, and I thought, where would I be this very moment if Kit had never met me or killed anybody? This very moment, if my mom had never met my dad, if she'd have never died? And what's the man I'll marry going to look like? What's he doing right this minute? Is he thinking about me now? By some coincidence, even though he doesn't know me? Does it show on his face? For days afterwards, I lived in dread. Sometimes I wished I could fall asleep and be taken off to some magical land. But this never happened.
Kit is standing in ankle-deep water wearing some cut-off denim shorts. He tries dredging for food along the riverbed using his lacrosse stick-like net. He takes out his gun and shoots into the water, unaware that an older man is standing on the other side of the river watching him. Holly is crouching in amongst golden grass, putting on some pink lipstick. Kit is looking paranoid. He raises a pair of binoculars to his eyes and focuses on the forest around their hideaway. A hen has been trapped under a basket made of intertwined twigs. Kit spots a man carrying a rifle moving along a track. Holly runs to the treehouse.
Get out of here, run! Somebody's coming. Hide!
Kit grabs a shotgun and races through their elaborate compound, bare-chested, then slides across the ground, knocking free a stick, which lets a camouflaged hatch drop over him. Holly trips and falls behind a fallen tree trunk. The forest is still. An armed man moves from tree trunk to tree trunk. Then more men appear, cautiously closing in on the couple's idyll. The men in the group range in age from early 20s to at least late 50s. They draw closer to the treehouse, taking in the series of walkways and ladders, as well as Kit's car, partially covered by tall stalks of dried grass. As one man cocks his weapon, Kit cautiously lifts the hatch. One of the posse is standing just a few feet in front of him. Kit suddenly stands up.
Hey!
Kit shoots one of the men in the back, then turns and sends a bullet ripping into a second man's chest. A third man sets off running and Kit chases him.
Help!
He shoots him in the back and he goes flying forward to land in the dirt.
Holly?
Holly walks through tall grass in a numb daze.
Get in the car, Red. Well, you don't need this.
He throws away a rusty bird cage.
Kit felt bad about shooting those men in the backs, but he said they'd come in like that and they would have played it as down and dirty as they could. And besides, he'd overheard them whispering about how they were only interested in the reward money. With Lawman, it would have been different. They were out there to get a job done and they deserved a fair chance. But not a bounty hunter.
Holly stares at Kit for a long moment before getting into the car. The couple leave the forest, and Kit drives along a track flanked by vast stretches of grassland. A man standing at the screen door of his remote home sees the car approaching. The man steps outside.
We went to hide out with a friend of Kit's from the days of the garbage route.
Kit brings the car to a stop and he and Holly get out. He's holding a shotgun in one hand and a white hen in the other. The creature's white wings hang limply as it dangles upside down.
How you doing, Cato?
Not bad.
Kit offers him the bird.
Take it, son of a bitch.
Cato accepts it and admires it with simple pleasure. He strokes its feathers.
What you been doing?
Run this place for a fella in town. Nothing much to speak of.
Well, I don't notice us hustling trash either. Where'd you get them antlers?
They come with the house.
Well, Cato, I want you to meet my girl, Polly Sargis.
Hi. Did you hear about the guy at the nut house that walked around naked, except for hat and gloves? And this nurse came up to him and said, hey, what do you walk? You can't walk around that way. And the guy says, well, nobody gets okay. Nobody comes around here anyway. And so he said, the nurse says, well, what do you have on the hat and gloves for? The guy says, well, you never know.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I guess.
She plays clarinet, too.
Don't you get bored around here?
Well, sometimes. The other day, though, an old boy plowing in the field over there found some old coins. Old Spanish coins.
That's what he told you, huh?
Nope. He showed me one.
What'd they look like?
Well, kind of round like so, and gold.
Where at?
Right over in that field over there. I'll show you if you want.
And finish my supper.
As Holly bites into an apple, she and Kit share knowing looks.
Well, we're thinking of going down to Texas. Holly wants to visit some of the people down there. But after that, I don't know. I say Mexico's nice.
Kit, maybe I better get a shovel.
Okay.
I'll catch up with you.
Okay.
Found a lid. It's laying on the ground over there.
Put that down. It's dirty.
She throws the lid at him like a discus, and he responds by tossing a stone at her. A playful contest breaks out.
You missed.
You're pissing.
Cato's starting to run.
Hey, you're throwing big ones.
How? Cato! The shovel's in the truck!
Kit fires his shotgun, and a bullet rips through Cato's torso and out of his back. He falls to the ground, but somehow manages to get back up on his feet and staggers towards the house. Kit has to jog a little to catch up with the much larger man. He overtakes him, then holds open the screen door so that Cato can head inside. Cato crawls onto the unmade bed, then slumps against the wall.
Kit never let on why he shot Cato. He said that just talking about it could bring us bad luck, and that right now we needed all the luck we could get.
A framed picture.
You never told me about her.
Cato stares blankly at Kit as he puts the picture down, then crouches and peers under the bed. Holly's standing near the window of the neighbouring room, smoking a cigarette. The walls are adorned with rusting equipment, as well as an old-fashioned radio. Kit sets his shotgun down.
Look at all this junk.
How's he doing?
I got him in the stomach.
Is he upset?
He didn't say anything to me about it.
He takes the cigarette from between her fingers and has a drag, then returns it to her. He crosses to a table and takes a quick look in a catalogue.
Bunch of junk.
He peers into the bedroom where Cato is still sitting on the bed, his breathing more laboured and a pattern of sweat on his face.
He stole that cage. I saw him doing it.
Holly's leafing through the catalogue.
What you looking in there for? Can't afford any of that.
I'm just looking.
Don't you go in there and keep him company for a while.
Cato's looking at his reflection in a small piece of mirror.
Hi. Huh. That your spider in there? In that bottle?
Yeah.
What do you feed him?
Oh, flies. Grasshoppers, and I'll catch him.
Does he bite?
He ain't never bit me.
A small blue car approaches the run-down house, churning up swirls of choking dust. Kit steps outside to assess the new arrivals. It's a young couple.
Hi.
Hi.
Where's Cato?
Well, he's gone.
Gone?
Yeah.
Where?
He said not to tell.
Oh, yeah?
He said for you to give us a lift into town. You're the ones with the Studebaker, aren't you?
Well, I just need to pick up something in the house.
I can't allow that.
What?
You go in there, I have to kill you.
What's going on?
Can't afford to take chances. Come on out of there, young lady. Let's us go out in this field here. Come on. Now, let's get the... I'm going to have to keep an eye on you.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Hi. What's going to happen to Jack and me? I have to ask Kit. He says Frog, I jump. Okay. What's your friend's name?
Jack.
You love him?
I don't know.
I gotta stick by Kit. He feels trapped.
I can imagine.
Well, I felt that way, hadn't you?
Kit has his pistol in his hand.
Okay, come on, you two, down the cellar. Come on. Hey. You promised to stay down there for an hour?
Yeah.
You expect me to believe that?
Yeah.
I'm gonna shut the door.
He locks it, then fires a couple of bullets through a gap in the door.
Think I got him?
I don't know.
Well, I'm not going down there and look.
Kit and Tolly run away from the storm cellar in the middle of the field. Kit reaches his hand out to her, but she's concentrating so hard on running that all she can do is pump her arms and stare into the horizon. Back at the house, she uses a length of wood to prod Cato. He doesn't move.
Suddenly, I was thrown into a state of shock. Kit was the most trigger-happy person I'd ever met. He claimed that as long as you're playing for keeps and the law's coming at you, it's considered okay to shoot all witnesses. You had to take the consequences, though, and not whine about it later.
Kit has carried Cato's body to a boxcar.
He'd never seemed like a violent person before, except for once, when he said he'd like to rub out a couple of guys whose names he didn't care to mention. It all goes to show how you can know a person and not really know him at the same time.
He closes the double doors.
We're in for it now. If they catch us. What'd you put him in there for?
Just keep him out of the sun.
Kit paces round to the other side of the boxcar, cussing and pacing, seeming angry and frustrated with himself. Holly heads back into the house, leaving Kit to stride up and down, occasionally flinging out his arms and running his hand through his hair. Now the couple are driving along a long, straight country road in Jack's Studebaker.
At this moment, I didn't feel shame or fear. It just kind of blah, like when you're sitting there and all the water's run out of the bathtub.
You tired?
Yeah.
Yeah, you look tired. Listen, honey, when all this is over, I'm gonna sit down and buy you a big, thick steak.
I don't want steak.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Hey, look, they're probably gonna blame that on me, too. Bastard.
The whole country was out looking for us, for who knew where Kit would strike next. Sidewalks cleared out. Stores closed their doors and drew the blinds. Posses and vigilance committees were set up from Texas to South Dakota. Children rode back and forth to school under heavy guard. A famous detective was brought in from Boston. He could find no clues. People left their lights on when they went to sleep. My clarinet teacher said I probably wasn't responsible, but others said I was. Then, on Thursday, the governor of Oklahoma sent out the National Guard to stand watch at the Federal Reserve Bank in Tulsa when word got out that Kit meant to rob it. It was like the Russians had invaded.
Sepia-toned footage of a convoy of pickups loaded with armed men. A woman in a maid's uniform steps away from the top floor window of a grand house as Kit and Holly approach the front door.
We needed supplies, so we went to a rich man's house. Kit figured it'd be safer and quicker than shopping in the downtown. A maid came to the door.
Hi, I'm here to check the meter. My tools are in here. Oh, this is Holly. She's from Texas.
Later we found out she was deaf and we hadn't even known it.
Excuse me.
Hi.
Yes?
This your place?
Yes.
Sorry to barge in on you. Anyone else here besides you two?
No.
Good deal. Oh, we're on the run, and I'd like to hang out here for a while, a couple hours maybe. How'd that be?
Stay as long as you like.
Kit has been aiming his gun at the man. Now Holly is running her finger around the top of a wine glass.
Next time I ring, that means it's time to clear out.
Holly moves a white bust from on top of a piano to a marble pedestal. Kit takes a glass of sherry down from an ornate mantelpiece, then replaces it. They both seem overawed by their opulent surroundings and keep sitting in different spots simply because they can. Holly slumps in a chair with high armrests, while Kit sits in a more comfortable seat with his legs crossed. He leans his head back against the soft cushioning.
I left Kit in the parlor and went for a stroll outside the house. The day was quiet and serene, but I didn't notice, for I was deep in thought and not even thinking about how to slip off.
Having taken a walking cane from a stand in the hall, Holly stands on a sloping segment of lawn dotted with trees and a life-size model of a deer.
The world was like a faraway planet to which I could never return. I thought what a fine place it was, full of things that people can look into and enjoy.
Listen to your parents and teachers. They got a line on most things, so don't treat them like enemies. There's always an outside chance you can learn something.
Kit's talking into a recording device.
Try to keep an open mind.
Try to understand the viewpoints of others. Consider the minority opinion. But try to get along with the majority of opinion once it's accepted.
He pauses for a moment's thought.
Of course, Holly and I have had fun, even if it has been rushed. And, so far we're doing fine. Hadn't got caught. Excuse the grammar.
Holly joins the rich man and the maid in a room where the furniture has been covered with white sheets.
Pa. Kit's downstairs playing with a dictaphone. Sometimes he acts like there's something wrong with his bean. Hope nothing ever goes wrong with mine.
You think he's crazy, huh?
I don't know. He's kind of odd.
She sits down beside the man.
They claim I got him wrapped around my little finger, but I never told him to shoot anybody. Gosh, I like your house.
Hearing the doorbell, Kit puts down the newspaper he's been reading, takes his handgun off the mantelpiece, filling its vacant spot with a framed picture. He tucks the gun into his pocket before opening the door to a man with something rolled up under his arm.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Scarver here?
Yeah. The thing about him, he's down with the flu. He's sick.
Really?
I'd invite you inside, except it's contagious. Don't want to start an epidemic.
No, of course not. It's only he called last night and asked if I'd come by.
Well, he didn't have it last night.
The man nods, looking confused, then takes something out of his pocket.
What's that?
Well, I'd like to leave a message, if that's okay.
Sure.
Kit nods, looking tense.
You have to excuse me now. I have to go back inside. Bye.
Kit closes the door, and the man turns away, looking faintly perturbed. Kit drops the note into a large vase, then bounds up the stairs.
Hey, Tex, we're out of here.
He grabs a white straw hat and a coat from some hooks in the hallway, then strides into the sitting room. A little later, he joins the rich man and the maid, holding the gun in his hand.
Hi. What you doing?
Just thinking.
Good way to kill time as any. She okay?
Yes.
Good. We're going to take the Cadillac for a while. How'd that be?
Fine.
Don't worry, I won't let her drive. Oh, and here's a list of everything I borrowed. Car's on there, too.
Okay, ma'am, let's go. Out that way. Go on.
You're my friend, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, no monkey business now.
Kit locks the man and the maid in a closet, then quickly wipes his prints off the door handle with a handkerchief.
Groceries.
He heads outside.
That guy could sell that list I gave him as a sample of my handwriting.
Kit is wearing the straw hat and coat, while Holly has a shawl over her head.
Hey, why are you always walking ahead of me?
Well, why are you always walking behind me? Don't!
Anybody ever done that to you before?
No.
Positive?
Yes.
Guess there's no way I'll ever know for sure. That guy must pay through the nose to keep this place up. Lawn, gas and electric, bagworm, plus upkeep on the cars. Yeah, you get a little money in your pocket, you think all your problems are solved. Well, let me tell you, they're not.
They reach a black Cadillac, and Kit opens the passenger door for Holly. She slides in, and Kit puts a suitcase on the back seat before walking round to the driver's side.
I'd like to get out of here.
As soon as I start the car. And fix my hat.
He rearranges the hat, then puts the car in gear and pulls away along a sweeping driveway.
Fearing there'd be roadblocks on the highways, we took off across that region known as the Great Plains. Kid told me to enjoy the scenery, and I did.
Rumor. Pat Boone is seriously considering giving up his career so he can return to school full-time and complete his education. Fact. Pat has told Intimates that so long as things are going well for his career, it's the education that will have to take a back seat.
I don't blame him.
Rumor. Frank Sinatra and Rita Hayworth are in love. Fact. True, but not with each other.
Kit chuckles.
Yeah.
Through desert and mesa, across the endless miles of open range, we made our headlong way, steering by the telephone lines toward the mountains of Montana. Kid had sometimes rammed a cow to save on ammo and we'd cook it. Once we had to eat a bunch of salt grass. It tasted like cabbage.
Kit speeds along a dusty road.
For gas, we used the leakage from the valves of the pipelines we found along the way. Drip gas is what it's called in that part of the country. Little by little, we approached the border. Kit was glad to leave South Dakota behind and cursed its name. He said that if the communists ever dropped the atomic bomb, he wished they'd put it right in the middle of Rapid City.
That's Montana over there.
I never been to Montana. Acquaintance of mine's been there, but I hadn't. Never had any reason to.
State bird's a meadowlark.
The sky above the seemingly endless prairie is washed with pale shades of lilac and peach. Kit gazes at the horizon, his shotgun held across the back of his neck, with his arms draped over the stock and barrel like a scarecrow. He stares at the golden light in the distance. Lightning flashes in a far-off bank of dense cloud, and a bird of prey turns its head from side to side.
We lived in utter loneliness, neither here nor there. Kit said that solitude was a better word, because it meant more exactly what I wanted to say. Whatever the expression, I told him we couldn't go on living this way.
Why not? I mean, I'm having fun, at least I'm not bitching.
Well, I feel like a kind of like animal living out here. There's no place to bathe and not any place to get anything good to eat.
Well, I'll catch you a big trout as soon as we get to the mountains.
Sitting in the back seat of the car, he pulls her close and gives her a deep kiss.
Everybody loves trout.
I'm serious.
He silences her with another kiss. After a while, she pulls away, wearing a resigned expression on her freckled face.
In the distance, I saw a train making its way silently across the plain, like the caravan in The Adventures of Marco Polo. It was our first taste of civilization in weeks, and I asked Kit if we could have a closer look.
Kit fires a shot into an American football, then batters it with the butt of his gun.
Before we left, he shot a football that he considered excess baggage. Afterwards, he took and buried some of our things in a bucket. He said that nobody else would know where we put them, and that we'd come back someday, maybe, and they'd still be sitting here, just the same, but we'd be different. And if we never got back, well, somebody might dig them up 1,000 years from now, and wouldn't they wonder?
A freight train approaches a bridge, where Kit and Holly are waiting with the car. It rushes overhead, sounding its horn, and the movement ruffles Kit's hair. Polly runs up to the trackside, and as the train leaves them behind, she gazes after it with a wistful, yearning expression. Kit has run on ahead of her. He scoops up a handful of stones.
Maybe we should have tried to hop it.
It's going too fast.
Yeah, I could have pulled the car up on the track, slowed it down some.
Yeah, then we'd be stuck here.
Well, maybe we ought to be stuck here. I'm not saying I know.
You're crazy.
Having picked up an empty glass bottle, Kit jumps over the side of the bridge and lands heavily in the dust.
Kit took the bottle and spun it around, leaving to fate which direction we should take.
He looks in the direction the bottle is pointing.
Well, maybe the slope here's throwing it off some. We ought to find a more flat place.
How about over here?
Oh, forget it. It doesn't matter. If I'm worth a damn, I'll pick the right direction. If I'm not, well, I don't care. See what I mean?
No.
Well, I shouldn't expect miracles, should I?
Kit walks up the slope to the track and takes in the panoramic view.
We'll keep on heading for that mountain.
Just remember, I said it wasn't such a hot idea.
We took off at sunset on a line toward the mountains of Saskatchewan. For Kit, a magical land beyond the reach of the law. He needed me now more than ever, but something had come between us. I'd stopped even paying attention to him. Instead, I sat in the car and read a map and spelled out entire sentences with my tongue on the roof of my mouth where nobody could read them. That night, we moved closer to the border, and clear across the prairie at the very edge of the horizon, we could make out the gas fires of the refineries at Missoula, while to the south, we could see the lights of Cheyenne, a city bigger and grander than I'd ever seen. I felt all kind of things looking at the lights of Cheyenne, but most important, I made up my mind to never again tag around with a hell-bent type, no matter how in love with him I was. Finally, I found the strength to tell Kit this. I pointed out that even if we got to the far north, he still couldn't make a living.
I can get a job at the mines. Northwest Mines. Hell, I got all the qualifications. I can ride and shoot. And I don't mind the cold. In fact, I kind of like the cold.
What?
Nothing. I was just running off of the mouth. As usual.
I'm sorry I wasn't listening.
Hey, man, don't look it.
Well, you know, they probably asked to see your driver's license before they'd hire you.
Well, I'm not going to let that stop me. You smoke coming?
Yeah.
You haven't seen me when I'm going after something, honey. Tough. Hey, don't touch that. That can't go.
Kit has stopped the car, and he and Holly dance in the light of the headlamps. They turn slowly on the spot against a backdrop of pitch-black night sky. And very soon, Kit is half-holding and half-gripping Holly's hand and wrist.
I thought you loved me. Boy, if I could sing a song like that. You said you loved me. I mean, if I could sing a song about the way I feel right now. Together to it'd be a hit. Forever.
Holly stays silent and allows him to maneuver her around. She's being swamped by the oversized coat that Kit stole from the rich man's house. And touch two lips that lie. The couple's elongated shadows are distorted by the undulating waves of dirt on the ground. The night is so dark that they appear to be dancing in some kind of isolated vacuum in the center of a vast expanse of nothingness.
Kit knew the end was coming. He wondered if he'd hear the doctor pronounce him dead, or if he'd be able to read what the papers would say about him the next day from the other side. He dreaded the idea of being shot down alone, he said, without a girl to scream out his name. Then for an instant, the sight of the mountains and the dawn light got his hopes back up.
God, what a sight. Hey, tell me this, honey. Why does a little Texas girl like yourself think of a sight like that?
The mountain on the horizon is tinted the same shade of blue as the clouds overhead. The car churns up dust as it approaches a very small oil rig in the center of the prairie. There's a small trailer parked up nearby.
Love is here.
A man steps out of the trailer.
Morning. You got any gas?
Maybe.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but we got to ask you for it. We're about out. We've been driving all night. Actually, I don't even have time to explain it to you.
What I got, I can't spare.
Just a second now. That's your truck, isn't it? You didn't walk out here.
It's mine, all right.
Well, listen, I'm gonna swap you my Cadillac. Now, don't worry, you're getting a fair deal. Hell, ask anybody. What's Blue Book value on this thing, Mildred?
Who are you?
Name's Carruthers. I believe I shoot people every now and then. Not that I deserve a medal.
Kit!
Holly has spotted a helicopter approaching the rig.
Okay, friend. Start running.
Good change.
Go on, get.
Holly crouches down behind the rig.
Boy, I had a feeling today was going to be the day. Helicopter.
Yeah.
He's not going to take us for any ride either. Come on, let's make a run for the car.
I don't want to.
Have you got a better idea?
I just don't want to go.
What?
As Kit stares at her in disbelief, Holly shrugs and his head sinks. He walks away from her.
What is wrong with you?
He paces agitatedly.
What is the matter with you?
As the helicopter closes in on them, Kit stands with his hands on his hips.
I don't want to make people like you. I really don't.
He kicks out at the rig.
You want a second chance, enlist. 12 noon, the Grand Coulee Dam, New Year's Day, 1964. You meet me there. Now, you got that?
She nods. Then, using a piece of metal as a shield, Kit makes a run for his car. A sheriff hops out of the chopper and they exchange shots. The sheriff is hit and tumbles to the ground. As Kit takes off at speed, the chopper pilot keeps his gun trained on Holly while going to check on his colleague. She walks towards him with her hands held up in surrender. Kit's car has been engulfed by dust, so that it appears as if he's being whisked away in the centre of a cyclone of dirt and sand. The helicopter lifts off, with Holly in the passenger seat and the injured man strapped to a board. Its blades whir silently as it rises into the pale blue sky. Kit pulls up outside a gas station.
Hey, anybody here? Hi. Say, you got any shells for a Savage 300 Savage?
Nope.
Damn, I pissed all mine away shooting up bottles. Hey, you want to fill her up for me? Please?
Kit takes a suitcase off the back seat and carries it across the dirt forecourt, then drops it on the ground and opens it up. He starts tossing Holly's things into a rusting oil drum. He carelessly discards net underskirts and delicate scarves, then his attention is caught by a book with a red cover. He picks it up and carries it away from the oil drum, then speaks to the gas attendant.
You want any of that junk? It's yours.
Kit sees a sheriff's car coming towards him on the road and quickly dives into the Cadillac. The sheriff's car makes an abrupt about turn, and while its tires are still screeching across the surface, Kit drives away from the pumps. The sheriff puts on his flashing red lights. Kit veers off the main road and onto a dirt track, struggling to steer and hold his gun at the same time. He swaps hands and holds the gun out of the window, firing off random shots at the pursuing vehicle. Both cars are kicking up masses of dust. Despite the dire situation, Kit adjusts the rearview mirror so he can check out his reflection, then vainly rearranges his hair. A moment later, he drives off the track and across a field of cans. The sheriff's car is closing in on him, and they drive through a barbed wire fence at almost the same time. The sheriff's car speeds up so that it's alongside the Cadillac. It rams into its side, and the driver fires off a couple of shots. Kit manages to pull ahead and has to duck as a bullet zooms past dangerously close to him. They reach a T-junction, and Kit makes a last-minute decision to go left. His car slides across the road, but he manages to get control of it. The sheriff's car is not so lucky, and rolls onto its side. Kit glances over his shoulder to see if he is still being pursued, but the road is clear.
Many times I've wondered what was going through Kit's head before they got him, and why he didn't make a run for it while he still had the chance. Did he figure they'd just catch him the next day? Was it despair? He claimed to having a flat tire, but the way he carried on about it, I imagine this is false.
The sheriff's car is back on four wheels. Having put on the straw hat, Kit shoots out his own tire and stands on the car bonnet to look back along the road. He places his fingertips on the insides of his wrists, apparently taking his pulse. Then he jumps down and starts gathering an armful of rocks from the roadside. With the sheriff's car now visible on the horizon, he abandons carrying the rocks away and starts to construct some kind of shrine with them. As the car draws ever closer, Kit works conscientiously and calmly. The sheriffs get out of the car, and Kit throws his hands up in surrender, then starts to walk towards them.
Hi.
Hold it right there.
I could have held off an army if I could have got behind a boulder up the mountain.
Oh, yeah?
As long as my ammo held out. Right there's where you called me.
Who did it, Ray?
Kit turns round, and one of the sheriffs forces his legs apart to search him.
You better not leave that Cadillac sitting out here.
Put your hands back your head. I'll put the other one on yourself.
Kit brings his hands down in front of him and secures the other half of the cuffs. One of the sheriffs gives him an appraising look.
Hell, he ain't no bigger than I am. Look at that.
You gonna give me a call, Florida here, Sheriff?
He should have thought about that before he got caught. Shouldn't he?
One of the men fires off his gun into the distance, making Kit flinch. Now, Kit is sitting in the sheriff's car.
think I'll take the juice?
Beats me.
Say, what kind of rifle was that you were shooting at?
30-06.
You ever had to open up like that before?
Nope.
Well, you boys have performed like a couple of heroes. Don't think I'm not gonna pass it around when we get to town.
The man sitting in the back seat snatches the hat off Kit's head and tosses it out of the car window, where it rolls across the road for a moment.
You toss my hat out the window.
Wanna see me?
No.
Kit? Kit, I got a question for you. You like people?
They're okay.
Then why'd you do it?
I don't know. I always wanted to be a criminal, I guess. Just not this big one. Takes all kinds of...
The sheriffs share an amused look.
You know who that sumbitch looks like? You know, don't you?
No.
I'd kiss your ass if you don't look like James Dean.
Kit looks genuinely pleased by the comparison. Now, Kit's with a group of police and army officers.
How you doing there, Kit?
Fine as can be expected. Just locked up, can't move.
That's nice right. Little coat you got on there.
Same. It's leather. Hey!
Get over here.
Now, looky here, here's the real prize. Must have had this about 10 years. Look at there. Who's gonna get it?
Give me that something.
There you go.
Where are you from?
South Dakota. Where are you from?
Here.
Want a comb?
Jody James from South Dakota.
Yeah, I know. She got out of there, too.
Hey, Ken, who's your favorite son?
Eddie Fisher. Who's yours?
Eddie Fisher.
Damn. You want a pen?
How old are you?
Don't you read the papers?
You ever been married?
No, I haven't. Yeah.
While Kit holds court standing on the wing of a small plane in a hangar, Holly is out on the airfield where dozens of soldiers and civilians are milling about.
Hey, listen, Tom, I don't mean to tell you how to run your show here, but these cuffs are pinching some. What do you say now?
I need to get your signature on some paperwork here, Kit.
Yeah, well, I'll have to read it first. Suppose I can get a Coke while I do.
Sure thing.
Come on. You boys keep out of trouble.
Don't worry about that. Holly's over here, Kit. I'm gonna see her.
Sure.
Kit is wearing a leather harness with chains attached to it.
I give him the papers to sign. I'm gonna get him a coat.
You wanna give me a little slack there?
He leans against a car alongside Holly.
Huh?
She shifts slightly, staring at him for a moment, then lowering her gaze.
Don't worry now, I'm gonna get you off these charges. There's a whole lot of other boys out there waiting for you. You're gonna have a lot of fun.
He moves closer to her.
Boy, we rang the bell, didn't we? I'll say this, though. That guy at the deaf maid, he's just lucky he's not dead, too.
Holly averts her gaze.
Of course, too bad about your dad.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to sit down and talk about that sometime.
A plane comes in to land on the runway, and Holly and Kit start making their way towards it across the airfield, followed by a large group of soldiers, police, sheriffs, and reporters. Holly's hands are cuffed in front of her, while Kit is still wearing the harness and chains, which resemble the type of halters used to restrain dangerous dogs. The plane is guided along the runway by a vehicle adorned with red and white checked flags. Kit is looking confident as he strides across the airstrip. A man holding a little boy in his arms points him out. Kit leans his paperwork on a man's back in order to sign it.
There you go, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief Sims. Sorry if I caused you any inconvenience.
You ain't caused me any trouble.
Thanks anyway.
Well, Kit.
Tom.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
I mean it.
I know you. Good luck to you too.
Now we go.
Okay. Thank you. Come on, Ren.
The plane's propellers start to run, slowly at first, then rapidly picking up speed. It starts to taxi along the runway.
Kit and I were taken back to South Dakota. They kept him in solitary, so he didn't have a chance to get acquainted with the other inmates, though he was sure they'd like him, especially the murderers. Myself, I got off with probation and a lot of nasty looks. Later, I married the son of the lawyer who defended me. Kit went to sleep in the courtroom while his confession was being read, and he was sentenced to die in the electric chair. On a warm spring night, 6 months later, after donating his body to science, he did.
Sir, where'd you get that hat?
State.
Boy, like to buy me one of them.
You're quite an individual, Kit.
Holly gazes at Kit.
Think you'll take that into consideration?
The stoic lawman beside Kit smiles in spite of himself, and the corner of Holly's mouth twitches, then she turns her head slightly to stare out of the window. The distant sun gleams golden between plateaus of clouds stretching across the pale blue sky.